What you're about to hear is so powerful that I'm still thinking about it as I speak these words to you a few days later. Before we get started then, I wanted to share with you several quick thoughts that have occurred to me since this episode was recorded. This guy that I'm about to introduce you to basically makes Sophie's choice over and over again. The judgment calls he makes on a regular basis are every bit as intense and often look just as much like a lose-lose. Now, he may tell you he has to do it and it's part of his job, but remember, even as he says that, he's chosen to put himself there. It's his purpose. Where he is and what he's doing is no accident. Also, pay careful attention when he talks about how all three of his eldest daughters are on track to do exactly what was demonstrated to them when they were raised. These kids could go to the States, get a job, make money, but they're not. And the most powerful part that somehow got overlooked in the context of the show, the two eldest are both about to get married to guys who have a similar passion and purpose as their dad. This is what leaving a legacy is all about at a deeper level, gentlemen. It's not just continuing your genetic line. It's about extending your vision, your purpose, and the very way in which you leave the world better than you find it. Now, fair warning, Daryl may or may not be coming from a different worldview perspective than you are. Hey, some of you may roll your eyes at my inviting such a blatantly Christian man on a show like this, while others of you may stand up and cheer. Regardless of where you're coming from, open your mind and see the reality before you. A firmly held cornerstone belief system anchors your character, thereby fortifying your power as a true Big Four man. When you are more sure of what you believe, you are more assertive, making your purpose more plainly visible, and therefore granting you the courage to do what's right. And what that adds up to is respect. Once you've earned that respect, which isn't to be confused with commanding it with a ham fist, you'll draw others around you who share that belief system, but they will still look to you as the man to make the hard decisions, someone who has the courage and the wisdom to do so, since someone still has to do that. The essence of all of this makes you the patriarch of your family, the most respected man in your social circle, and the most successful professional in your workplace. I'd also be remiss if I didn't share this with you. It's easy to listen to my guest, hear his humility in combination with true manhood, and start feeling down on ourselves. Remember, I'm right there with you. I'm not sure I could do what Daryl does for one day, but chances are you've got a passion and a purpose that's every bit as worthy of your character, and rest assured that's what's right for you. Part of mine is, and will continue to be, introducing you to powerful ideas on how to be a great man who not only attracts women, but who utterly inspires them, such as you're about to be treated to. Enjoy, gentlemen.
You're listening to the world famous Chick Whisperer podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Okay, all right, here we are with episode number 73 of the world famous Chick Whisperer podcast. Been a long time since I sat in this chair and gave you guys the kind of show I know you want and deserve. Today, I'm going to have exactly the kind of show I think you guys have been hungry for. Today, we're going to have a completely different guest. I'm going to tell you ahead of time. Let me warn you, this guy is not a pickup artist. He's not a sex expert. He's not some hard-ass CEO of some organization somewhere. Who he is one of my favorite people to check in with on Facebook. And he is also one of the best examples of what I call a Big Four man who I know of right now. A Big Four man is confident. He's masculine in the way women define it. He's able to make women feel safe and secure in his presence. And he's also a man of character, a man with a cornerstone belief system that is unshakable, that helps him become a consistent guy who makes good decisions, who makes women feel safe and comfortable in his presence over the long term. Today, we're going to focus on that fourth one, character, because I think my guest, whose name is Daryl Fulp, exemplifies that. He's not perfect, just like you and I aren't perfect, but I really think you're going to like what he has to say because it's something completely different. Daryl Fulp comes from San Antonio Aguascalientes, Guatemala. He doesn't come from there originally, but he's there now. And he runs an organization called Hope for Home Ministries that I'm going to have him talk to you about. Daryl's coming from a Christian mindset. We've had guys on this show who are coming from Buddhist mindsets, from agnostic mindsets. You're going to like what he has to say because it's the cornerstone belief system that drives him that matters. So whatever your cornerstone belief system is, I invite you to open your mind and take a look at what Daryl's going to say, because what he and his wife and his family are doing in Guatemala is just badass. So Daryl, welcome, man.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
You know, you and I go back 30 years, don't we? We went to college together.
Yeah. We met each other about 30 years ago exactly, I think.
Yeah. And you met your wonderful wife, Wanda, in college. I don't remember a time when you two were apart.
Yeah, we started dating, I don't know, in October of our freshman year, and we're married the summer before our senior year. So yeah, we were pretty much an item through most of college.
Now that alone is reason enough to listen to you, if you're a guy listening to this, because you've had one great woman in your life. You've continued to attract her and keep things good with her. You now have 10 children of your own, 5 biological, 5 adopted, correct?
That is correct. We have 5 children that were adopted, 2 from the United States because we were foster parents for 13 years.
Right.
I have one son with special needs who was adopted from China, one daughter with special needs adopted from Korea, and one son with special needs that was adopted from here in Guatemala.
Now, you're in Guatemala now and you're running Hope for Home. Describe to me the mission purpose statement of Hope for Home.
We exist to bring glory to Jesus Christ by caring for children with special needs. The plight of children with special needs in Guatemala is very grave. The healthcare system here is collapsing, but everything is pay as you go. So if you don't have money to pay for your treatment, you don't get treatment. So we provide a group home for children with special needs, and we're planning on opening 9 additional ones that are based upon this model. And then we do rural village work where we work with families who have children with special needs by providing things like wheelchairs, medicine, therapy, education, counseling, et cetera, so that those children can remain with their families. And we work in very rural settings all over Guatemala for that purpose.
One of my first memories of reconnecting with you on Facebook was you posted something about somebody donating wheelchairs to your organization. And you were sort of reticent about taking the wheelchairs because they had the name of an organization whose thought processes you weren't really aligned with printed on them. And you were saying, hey, you know, should I just take these wheelchairs? And I remember saying, Daryl, I don't care if they have Dallas Cowboys logos on the back of them. You take those wheelchairs.
Yeah, well, I would have preferred Dallas Cowboys over the organization that had their name on it. They're an organization that greatly conflicts with what we believe to be truth. And as a result, we ended up not accepting those chairs. But
I remember that, though, because at the time, I didn't even realize what an Eagles fan you are. So I know that was – you had a good time with that.
We do still exist, but we just hide our faces a lot.
Yes, exactly. Well, I'm a Ravens fan, so it's not looking too much better for us this year either. But anyway, enough about me. How do children find their way to your home?
We are a fully licensed and authorized group home for children with special needs. In other words, we're a licensed orphanage. And so all the children that come to us are placed by the Guatemalan government through the court system. So some of our kids come to us because they've been abandoned, some because they've been abused, some because the families just simply can't care for their special needs. And so out of a desire to give them a better life, they surrender them and the courts place them with us.
And some of the kids who find their way to you have rather profound and shocking conditions. Let's just lay it on the line.
Oh, yes, yes. We have children who have come to our home, and we've had the privilege of carrying them to the arms of God because their condition was fatal and they died in our care. But we had the privilege of loving them as they passed. We have other children with severe brain damage, severe cerebral palsy, a variety of special needs.
Not to make it too simplistic, but you and Wanda are basically the Mother Teresa of Guatemala.
I don't know about that. I know that God has called us to do this work. We love this work. It's the toughest work we've ever done, but we love it. And I can't imagine doing anything else with my life.
You know, that brings up exactly what I wanted to talk about today with you, which is straight talk on the meaning of manhood and finding your purpose. I'm guessing that a lot of the people you know, especially if they're sequestered here in middle-class America or the UK, looking at what you're doing, are probably thinking to themselves, oh man, God bless Daryl and Wanda and their whole team down there and their family, because here we are in middle-class suburbia with a big screen TV and being able to drink a nice Merlot at night and safe and secure. And those poor bastards are down there in this third world country, you know, gutting it out and having this rough life and probably don't even have plumbing. And yet, I bet that's not the issue for you guys. My gut instinct, having traveled the world with my wife and our kids, is that you guys probably feel more alive every single day of your lives. Every fiber of your being, every cell in your body just bristles with life, with what you face and the adventures and the challenges, compared to everybody else who sort of just watches it on TV and sort of lives this passive lifestyle. We forget what it means to be alive. You guys are out there in the trenches. My guess is you guys wouldn't have it any other way.
Oh, no doubt. The reality of it is occasionally I'll have somebody ask me, how often do you get to go home? And my response is, I am home. I've had to go back to the United States 3 times since we've lived here. And in each time when I step off the plane back in Guatemala, it's a sigh of relief and, oh, it's good to be back. So I think all of us would say that this is the toughest thing that we've ever done. At the same time, I think all of us would say this is what God created us to do. And therefore, yes, I do feel alive. I feel like this is my purpose. This is my meaning. And I wouldn't trade it for anything.
What amazes me more about you and Wanda being willing to, quote unquote, make this sacrifice and go live in Guatemala rather than the United States, of course, what you've just described so eloquently as not being a sacrifice at all. The crux of the matter to me, and the main reason why I wanted you to be on my show, and I feel so honored and thrilled to have you here, Daryl, is that you are a guy who personifies what it means to be a leader in that masculine sort of way that women crave and look up to. You are faced with decisions. I mean, just lately on Facebook, based on what you've been sharing with us, you're a guy who's faced with decisions that would make a normal average man shrivel up and crumble and probably lay on the end of his bed in a fetal position, sucking his thumb. You've got life and death decisions. You've got $5,000 or $6,000 that can either be used to take a Hail Mary pass and perhaps save the life of this girl who the chances are 95-5 she's going to pass away anyway, unfortunately. Or you can take that $5,000 and you can help 20 or 30 children with it. And it seems to me that Wanda, the very parents of these children, doctors, everybody who's in your circle of influence kind of looks at you and says, what are we going to do, Daryl? And you make these decisions. And just in the past month, there's been 3 or 4 or 5 of them. You're a man who not only faces these hard decisions without running away, but you make them and it seems like you move on and deal with the results of having made the decision. It seems to me like you never stick your head in the sand. How do you find the courage to make these decisions? And what is the framework you use as a man to be a solid decision maker?
You know, I guess my answer to that is who else is going to do it? Mm. And I think we have this mindset of heroes in our society. We love the concept of heroes. I think that's why all the hero movies are so popular this day, you know, the Avengers, Iron Man, all of the Marvel stuff. And it's because we want to have this concept that somewhere out there, there is a hero. And that person is going to make the decision. That person is going to do what's necessary. They're smarter than me. They're stronger than me. They're more courageous than me. I couldn't do it, but they will. And we live with this fallacy that someone else will do it. Here, God has thrust me into a situation where it's very clear there's no one else. no one else is going to do these things. So a decision has to be made. So with God's help, I do the best that I can to hear his voice, to analyze the information that I have available, and then to make a decision. And sometimes those decisions are good decisions, and I can celebrate because we see a victory. Sometimes those are good decisions, but we don't see the results. In other words, sometimes I do what God has told me to do, but we don't get to see the benefit of that decision. But it was the right decision. There was no other choice to be made. Other times, I make bad decisions. And at times, as a result of those bad decisions, someone can die or something bad can happen. And in those times, I have to absorb that responsibility. I have to look it square in the face and say, I screwed up. I have to learn from it. I have to ask God's forgiveness for blowing it. But then I don't have the convenience of continuing to sit there and wallow in it, because the next decision has to be made. Something else has to be done. So my response is, how do I find what it takes to make the decisions that are life and death and so difficult? Who else is going to do it?
Not to trivialize the depth of the decisions you're making, because they far outweigh the analogy I'm about to present, but I'm thinking of an NFL football quarterback. If it's a big game and he goes out and he makes a decision to run a pass play and throws the football into the arms of an opposing cornerback, he's thrown an interception and he's going to feel terrible about that. But because it's a championship game and he is the first string quarterback, he's got to go back out there on the next series and do what he knows he's good at doing.
Sure.
Yeah. How do you find that inner sanctum? How do you find that strength to go out there, even after a decision you might even regret, and move forward and clear your head? Is it just a matter of finding the forgiveness and saying, look, there's going to be a bad decision here and there? Or is there some kind of thought process you go through to get that mental state back to where you need to be? Is it a matter of grounding yourself, knowing that you're in this position and you really have no other choice, or is there more to it?
Well, I mean, that's the basis of it, is I really have no other choice. But I will also say that at the heart of that is my relationship with God. And I know that this isn't a spiritual program, but my relationship with Jesus Christ plays a huge role in my life. And so there are times when I just find myself alone, crying out to God in weakness and allowing him to speak back to me so that I can get the energy I need, the strength I need, and the courage I need to get back out there and do it again. I also have around me incredible people. So what you're seeing right now when you look at me is you see the director of a ministry, but you have my wife, who is one of the wisest people I know, who can speak truth to my heart the moments when I do fall into despair and am feeling discouraged or defeated or like I am a failure. She is there to speak wisdom and truth to my heart when I most need to hear it. But not only that, even my older children, who are very involved in this ministry, both here and around the world, they speak truth. We have an excellent team of godly people that work with me here in this ministry. But not just that, we work with other ministries here and all through Guatemala that are filled with quality people. And there are times when they do need to grab me by the shoulders and look me in the eye and through my tears say to me, Daryl, listen, you do what you have to do. You did the best you could do. God knows that. He loves you. You have to shake this off and you have to find a way to move on. And they pray for me and they give me a kick in the butt occasionally. And usually it's exactly what I need to keep going to the next step.
Now, see, look at the consistency there in your answer with what you said earlier about being a hero. I think a lot of times guys fall into the trap of going, I want to be a hero. I want the glory. I want to be able to take the credit for all the wonderful things I'm about to do. And at the same time, sometimes as guys, we can also fall into the trap of saying, you know, I don't need anybody else's help. I got this. I'm going to do this because if I have to share the glory with someone else, well, then, you know, that's going to somehow take away from me being a hero. And we want to be a hero so much that we get self-absorbed in that regard. And we think, okay, the point here is to be the hero, is to get the approval of others, to somehow impress the ladies with this, impress my peers with this. And what you're saying is, if I'm reading you correctly, that's only going to pile the pressure on to get this right. If you say, look, I'm just another guy like you, I have to make these decisions because who else is going to make these decisions? Then you're not seeing yourself as some kind of superhero, not somebody from a Marvel comic book like you talked about before, but a guy who is available to make the right decisions, but who is indeed fallible as a human being and might make the wrong one sometimes.
Well, I mean, as you share all of that, why do you think the burnout rate in men is so high?
Yeah.
They feel this pressure to be the lone superhero who comes in and fixes the problem and makes the decisions and everybody looks up to and women adore, and then swoop back out again to disappear into the night. And that's a huge fallacy. And we buy that lie over and over again, and we burn out. The reality is, one of the reasons why I stress over and over again through my blog, through Facebook, that there are no heroes is because so few people want to get involved because they look at themselves and say, I am no hero.
Exactly.
And my response is join the crowd. I mean, coming from my Christian perspective, you read through the Bible and you want to pretend that these guys in the Bible are these great heroes. In reality, they're average Joes who faced fear and obstacles and struggles and depression and all of these things. But through their relationship with God, they found the courage to keep going. They found the courage to say yes, even when they were afraid. And they weren't heroes. They were just average everyday guys like you and I who found the courage to follow God and let God do what he needed to do. And so I stress the no hero thing for those reasons. I want the average everyday person to look and say, hey, I know Daryl. He's no hero. He's just like me. If God can use him to make a difference in this world, if God can use him to do good things and to make an impact, then maybe he could use me too.
You know, another thing that comes to mind when you said that is those guys often made mistakes and made boneheaded decisions.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Those guys were normal guys.
Right. But at the same time, I think one of the things that we struggle with is that society has tried to redefine who we are as men. And so we feel a need to fight against our hardwiring, the way God created us to be. So God created us to be adventurers. God created us to be fighters. God created us to stand against evil and to stand for those who are oppressed, to stand for those who need help. And I think inside of us is that desire. All of that desire is impacting us and trying to form who we are, while society is around us saying, no, that's not who you're supposed to be. So we find all of these energies redirected towards things that don't make a difference. Instead of fighting for something that matters, we find ourselves fighting for a parking space or getting in road rage incidences. Or we try to find adventure on the weekends because we can't find it on Monday through Friday. And meanwhile, we shy away from big life decisions that need to be made. We need to be the go-to guys who step up to the plate when we're needed. But we shy away from those things and instead are pursuing other things that are a distortion of our hardwire. And that's a frustration. That's another reason why I try to be transparent with who I am and help guys to discover it's okay to be a guy.
Absolutely. You said so many things there that are so resonant to me. One of the things we talk about here is the concept of compassion being a masculine trait. The idea of feeling into someone else's pain and saying, look, it's up to me to stand in the gap and take away that pain is, of course, part of the male desire to provide and protect and to lead. It also kind of plays into that hero role you were talking about before. But really, if it's driven by this desire to help, this desire to remove pain, rather than this selfish desire to simply be a hero, your chances of being a lot more successful at it and getting a lot more gratification from it go through the roof. You know, for every Hitler, there's got to be a Franklin Delano Roosevelt, you know, and a Winston Churchill to stop him. A lot of times we as guys are saddled thinking, you know, we're all part of the problem. We're all people who are killers. We're all people who are destroyers because of what we've been led to believe about manhood, that it's not okay to be a man anymore. But masculinity is virtuous and it should stay that way. And that's why I love what you're saying.
Sure. I mean, if you look, one of the things that has driven us as men has been the media.
Yeah.
The media sought to redefine who men should be. And that's because of one thing. The media exists to sell to us. The media exists to make money by selling goods to us. So as men, we've been redefined to be real men if we're able to, quote, provide for our family. And now, don't get me wrong, providing for our family is a crucial role that we all have. But that gets distorted into providing for my children means that they get every toy that they want, that they get every name brand that they want, that they, we make sure they get the cell phone when they're 10 years old, that we make sure they have unlimited data on that plan. And what we've done is we've defined ourselves by what we own, by what we possess, by what we can give to our wife, by what we can give to our children. And we've created a situation in which we're enslaved to our jobs in order to provide for those things and in order to pay our credit card bills. We survive on Monday through Friday, hoping to find some kind of an adventure and some kind of a release on Saturday and Sunday so that we can find what we need to face Monday again. Meanwhile, I believe God created us to be men who make a difference, that does not survive on Monday through Friday and live for the weekend, but to do something that makes a difference in the world. That's something that we go to bed at night feeling good about, not just collecting a paycheck, but that we believe in, that we love, that we know we're going to turn around and leave this world in a better place when we leave. But we've so bought Park Avenue's definition of what masculinity is and what manhood is, that we don't feel free to embrace that adventure, that we don't feel free to go fight for something that matters because we're just told fighting is bad. And it's time for us to get back to embracing who God created us to be and follow some of those instincts.
Another thing you mentioned previously in this show was the idea of having community around you, that a real man just can't be a lone ranger going out there making decisions on his own and not caring about the input of other people, just feeling like he's got to shoulder that whole burden. I think that's absolutely mission critical, because in this day of Facebook and Twitter, people are actually experiencing less real community in developed countries than they used to. And people are meeting with each other less. They're not actually getting in front of real human beings. And I think that's driving a greater sense that we're in this by ourselves, not in this with someone else. You mentioned your wife and the role she plays in supporting you in your decision-making. You mentioned that you have your whole family there. You have a team of people. I thought that was a mission critical point to make, that you don't have to be a lone ranger. You shouldn't be a lone ranger. It's not up to you to get everything right and to do everything and to not depend on other people. Yet there's a certain arrogance, I think, if not flat out ignorance, that some guys have that, hey, look, it's all on us. We've got to do this. We've got to make our way in the world. We've got to be self-made. We've got to do all these things without help. Mm-hmm. And yet, perhaps the irony is, when you incorporate people, you help them look like heroes too. You help drive their purpose in life. You become an influencer to other people's purpose by accepting and building that community. I'd like you to talk about that some too, because you have your family with you even there in Guatemala. And I think some people would be like, well, how dare him take his children to Guatemala and subject them to that life? They didn't choose that. And I think you probably would have something to say about that particular mindset.
Well, first of all, on the top of community, it's completely essential for not just men, but men and women to have a community of people around them with which they can be honest, that they can be real, that they can be transparent. So in addressing that issue, we live in a society where we have access to more information than ever. I mean, I can go on Facebook and I can see Scott's post and Scott can see Daryl's post, and that's great, but we've really become more about marketing than we have about authentic relationships. So we post things on Facebook to make us look good. We post things on Facebook to make us seem confident and like we've got it together. And we fail to be transparent, which is one of the things I conscientiously resisted. I've always wanted to be real. And so if I struggle, if I'm struggling with decisions, if I'm struggling with discouragement, if I'm grieving, I want my Facebook community to know that, not just because I want sympathy and whining, but because I want them to see the real Daryl. And with a community of people around you, that you need to have a group of people that you can say, hey, I'm struggling now. This is hard. I need help. I need counsel. I need direction. I need a hug. I need a high five. Whatever it is you need in that moment. And anybody who does not have that is leaving themselves open for a huge fall. As far as my family's role in that team, they see me up close, personal, strengths, weaknesses, everything all put together. And yes, we did bring our whole family down here. And when we moved down here, the youngest one was 6 years old, I believe. And what I can say to you is we talked to our family about moving. We spoke to them about the decision. Some of them were too young to understand what the consequences of those decisions were, but overwhelmingly the kids supported the idea of moving here. Now that they're here, they fully embrace this mission. Just to give you a clue of how they've embraced that mission, my oldest daughter, Brittany, is now living in San Pablo La Laguna, about 3 hours from here, where she's working with special needs children there near Lake Atitlan in a very poor community. That's her passion. That's her life. That's her calling. Our second biological daughter, Krishana, she is going to be getting married here very soon. Her and her husband will be moving here full time, and they're going to be working with special needs children as well as doing sports ministry here in Guatemala. My daughter, Carissa, who is my third biological child, is now living in Uganda, where she is opening up a group home based on this model, working with special needs girls. So it's not like our kids feel like they've been drug along, but instead they understand what it's like to have a life that makes a difference. And they gotten a taste of that and they want it for their own lives. And that's impacting them. And it's going to, we have other children who are coming up who are being impacted as well and have the same kind of passion and desire to make a difference. And I think that's one of the things that we can miss by living in middle-class suburbia in the United States. We so often want to shelter our kids from the world, shelter our kids from the humanity, from the suffering, from the death and the pain. Our kids have experienced that up close and personal. They saw one of the girls in our home die while I was doing CPR on her and fighting for her life. They've seen some of the ugliness that this world has to offer. And people can say, oh, that's scarring them. That's making life rough on them. And sure, it has some negative emotions that are associated with those things, but it's also given them a passionate desire to make a difference in a world that is suffering. Whereas if they're constantly hid from suffering, you begin to believe the lie that what's really important is the kind of clothes I wear and how big my television set is. And I don't want my kids to grow up like that.
I hope everybody within the sound of my voice grasps how powerful what you just so glibly said really is. All I could think about while you were talking about that subject, Daryl, are all the kids who grow up in posh suburbia and end up addicted to cocaine or end up in jail or go the wrong way in life, even though they've been given all the privileges and all the protections that are potentially available to them in middle-class life, still they go looking for something else. That isn't enough. I'm not saying that if you raise your children a certain way and it's a good, solid, virtuous way, they're necessarily going to end up on the right track. But isn't it interesting how when we try to protect our children from something, it's often the very lessons that they needed to learn to become a more virtuous, more well-rounded human being, especially an adult, that we're actually protecting them from. And I think you've just so poignantly described that, and I applaud that. And, you know, we take our kids all over the world, and sometimes people say things like, well, you know, how dare you take your children all over the world and drag them on these trips? They didn't ask to do that. Hey, our children didn't ask to be born. You know, you can go all the way back in time and blame ourselves for all sorts of things as parents. But what we know about our kids is kind of mirroring what you were talking about, Daryl. The more we introduce them to different kinds of people, the more we introduce them to different worldviews, the more we introduce them to different food and different cultures. And the fact that, hey, look, you know what, son, not every kid in the world gets an Xbox for Christmas. Some of them are wondering where their next food's going to come from, yet those kids still play with each other, smile, and have community. There's more to this than what meets the eye in America. Those kids have more depth already than a lot of other kids do. They're more colorblind than a lot of other kids are. They'll walk up to any kid, regardless of race, color, or even religion, and make friends. And it's incredibly refreshing. And I think it's the right decision. It may not be the right decision for everybody, but it's the right decision for us. And we like what we're seeing in our children. Yet when you don't fall in line with what middle-class American culture says you ought to be doing, sometimes people will look at it with scorn when in reality, there's a prison involved with the culture that we live in that keeps us trapped based on other people's expectations and societal expectations, when in reality, real freedom is deciding, hey, look, what is it that I believe? Do I believe that enough to feel good about leading my family into that belief system and whatever comes of that? And I think you've boldly done that. And now look at your children as young adults moving forward, saying, hey, you know what? There was something to that. I think I'm going to move forward with that. I think it's powerful, Daryl.
Well, and I think one of the false gods we worship in America is the concept of safety.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, how many times do we say to our kids, oh, don't do that. You might get hurt. And almost from a young age, we rob our kids of their sense of adventure. Now, don't get me wrong. We don't want our kids making foolish decisions that have life and death consequences when they're at a young age. At the same time, though, how many times do we say, oh, I don't want him climbing up there because he might fall and break an arm? Well, you know, yeah, he might. But at the same time, I would rather have my son growing up thinking, I can do this instead of being afraid of what might happen. I want my kids to grow up with a sense of courage and adventure, and also the willingness to at times get hurt. At times, I will take my children with me into dangerous areas of Guatemala as we're doing ministry. And people will say to me, that's being irresponsible as a parent. No, it's not being irresponsible as a parent. I'm teaching my son that there are some things that are worth putting yourself at risk for. And that's what our society as a whole is missing, because we're so afraid of what might happen, we don't really live. And we're so afraid of what might happen, we don't take necessary risk in order to help others.
One of the things I think people don't fully realize is that when you overprotect a child, it robs that child of his or her self-esteem. You know, these other kids are allowed to do this. All the other kids are allowed to do this, and I'm not. And that carries over into adulthood and has very damaging ramifications. Whereas if you allow your kids to fall off their bicycle and scrape their knee, if you allow them to see some of the situations in life that other parents would cover their eyes and run away from, you're actually helping build that child's character. You're acquainting them with what life's really like and giving them a choice in the adventures they have. That's why I love what you're talking about.
Well, Scott, I don't know about you, but I've had 19 broken bones in my life, and each of those bones is a fascinating and fun story to tell.
Yeah, except when you have to use a chopstick to dig inside your leg cast because it itches right there at the bottom of your
exactly. Yeah,
right. If you're not acquainted with that feeling, go break your leg sometime and you'll live that adventure too.
Yes.
On that lighter note, one of the things I really appreciate about you, Daryl, is you can make these decisions that will wilt guys. I mean, this life and death decisions. And yet you have this stunning ability to not take yourself so seriously. You're still having fun. You're still posting on Facebook about your beloved sports teams. And sometimes you'll post something that's funny. You're willing to look at the brighter side of life, even though you're faced with just this barrage of what other people would say, man, that's such an ugly, tragic thing he's got to face every day. And with the kids in your home and what they continue to face every day of their life, you still have acquired this ability to not take yourself so seriously. How do you do that? And why is it important anyway?
Well, I think part of the way I do that is because I know me. You know, from a distance, I can seem like this amazing, great guy, so courageous and so wise and such a hero. But I know me, and I know I'm none of the above. I know that I'm just an average, everyday guy who had the courage to say yes to God. So that's one of the ways, is I can't take myself too seriously because I know myself too well. Secondly, I have to do that. If I don't find ways to enjoy life apart from those decisions, apart from this ministry, I wouldn't last 6 months, much less 5 years. That's what we're going on now, is almost 5 years. And for the next 50 years, that is going to be required to build this ministry to what I believe God is calling it to be. So that's the second reason. And the third reason is, I believe, is because of the suffering and the death that we see on almost a daily basis. It makes you enjoy the other parts of life that much more. I recognize the suffering. I want to alleviate suffering, and I fight to alleviate that suffering day after day after day. But at the same time, when I step away from that and I look at my children's faces, and when I hear a funny joke, I feel like I laugh louder. I celebrate more enthusiastically. I party harder when I step away from those situations, because I realize how much about life is worth celebrating. When other people see something as common or everyday, I realize I can't take it for granted, because every day I see people who don't have those things. And so for me, I feel like my silly side, my laughter side, my sports side, where I'm cheering for my beloved Cubbies or my pathetic Eagles, that those are releases for me when I step away from those other things and just find joy in the other things of life.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when you're faced with the lack of permanence of this earthly world and you see death around you, it not only makes you appreciate life more, it allows you to say, hey, look, this is just the way it is. This is reality. I'm going to have to find a way to enjoy life, a way to bring some laughter, just because there's got to be good balance here. It forces you to seek that out and go for it. Whereas if you're perhaps working in a nice, safe environment all week long, it can creep up on you that you're not living, that you're starting to fall into a depression, because there's no clear and present need to go out and laugh and have fun, because there's no clear and present death and danger around you. So I think what you just said is a rather profound point that is important for a lot of people to have sink in, that we do need to go out and play. We need to go out and celebrate. We need to go out and find ways to, you know, for lack of a better phrase, ease the pain in this life. And it seems like because of the life you and Wanda and your family have chosen, that that almost comes easier for you. And I think that's really profound. Time is running short, Daryl. Just kind of as a lightning round. I know we've talked a lot about decision making and being a provider and a protector and certainly being courageous. Talk about what else separates a real man from guys who are just doing what the media expects them to do.
That's a good question. I believe one of the things that designates a real man is that we focus on the things that are really important for our children and for our families. Take, for example, I had a conversation with a man a while back who has a son who's a great football player. And he was in high school and he was only a sophomore and he was one of the starting players on the high school football team. And, you know, every day he was going out with his son and spending time with him, practicing and pushing him. And he's talking about how great his son is at football and what a star athlete he is. And he's probably going to get scholarships and maybe even go pro someday. And as I was talking to this man, I said, you know, that's really good. And that's great. But let me ask you something. How's your son doing as a man? What's his relationship with God like? Is he befriending those who are not in the same class as him or the same crowd as him? What kind of man is he becoming? Because it's all well and good that you're helping him become a better football player, but how are you investing in his life as a man? And he stood there with his mouth open and he had no response. And I said, you know, as fathers, we have to focus on the things that are really important. And I think that that's something because we have bought into what society tells us. We make athletes heroes and we make possessions important and we do all of these things. So as parents, as fathers, and as husbands, we have to help our family focus on the things that really matter. We have to help our family see what's true and contrast it with a lie, which means we have to have real relationships with the people in our lives. We have to have a real relationship with our spouses. We have to have a real relationship that goes beyond the surface with our children. And that takes time. That takes investment. But as men, we have to focus on the things that really matter because the rest of the world is helping our family focus on the things that don't.
What does it mean to love your wife?
To love your wife is to say every day, I want to outserve her. I want to outlove her. It is to say, I'm not concerned with how she makes me feel. I'm concerned with how I make her feel. Today, does she know that she's the most important person on this planet to me? That she's more important than the children? That she's more important than my job? She needs to know that she's the apple of my eye. And that's something that at times I fell down. I get wrapped up in this ministry or work or preoccupations, and I can sometimes miss that. And then I turn around and recognize that my wife is standing there and she needs Daryl. She doesn't need the director. She doesn't need the adventurer who's going out to remote villages. She needs her husband and she needs my arms around her and she needs my eye-to-eye contact and she needs to hear those words, how proud I am of her, how much I love her, and how I wouldn't trade her for anything. So to love your wife is to outlove, to outserve, to outgive.
Some guys listening may confuse that with putting a woman on a pedestal. What's the difference?
The other night, I told my wife, the greatest gift that you have ever given me is that you have believed in me. You've always believed in me, even when I didn't believe in myself, even when everybody else didn't believe in me. Even when you didn't like everything that I was doing, you still believed in me. And what I would say is, I feel the same way about her. I believe in Wanda. And therefore, I've always got her back. When everybody else is kicking her down, I'm going to be lifting her up. I believe in her. And in that respect, she is on a pedestal, and I believe I'm on a pedestal for her, that we are untouchable in one another's eyes.
Guys, we've come to the end of our time. I would be remiss if I didn't give you a chance to check out what Daryl's doing. Obviously, nothing's for sale here. Go to www.thechickwhisperer.com/hope, H-O-P-E. That's www.thechickwhisperer.com/hope, and you will find a way there to donate to Daryl's cause. He actually begged and pleaded me not to tell you this, but I'm going to do it anyway, because even though his intention wasn't to raise money for his operation today and rather just to talk from his heart about what it means to be a man, which I thought was awesome, by the way, it's my decision to give you a chance to donate to what Daryl and his wife are doing in Guatemala if it's something you want to do. So go to www.thechickwhisperer.com/hope, H-O-P-E, and be generous. Insofar as what you can expect from your donation, you will be directly helping little children live a higher quality life who haven't had that chance so far. When you go to his site, I want to give you fair warning, you're going to see some very moving images, some shocking images. You will come face to face with what Daryl and his wife and his whole team deal with every day, and it's going to be a real eye-opener. Daryl, what a privilege to have you on, man. This has been a great conversation. Thank you so much, man.
Thanks for having me, man. It's been a privilege.
Yeah, and until I talk to you guys again real soon on episode number 74 of The Big Show, this is Scott McKay from XMY Communications. Be good out there.
The Chick Whisperer Podcast is copyright 2009 by XMY Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to sign up for the XMY Communications newsletter at www.thechickwhisperer.com. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for The Chick Whisperer Podcast.